Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday morning show with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Calamine.
Good morning, Phil.
Morning, Julie. How was your weekend?
Well, it was consumed by our KRFY annual membership drive, and it was a great membership drive.
Oh, we had come a good on. Time. That was only Friday and Saturday.
From 8 a.m. until 9 p.m., Phil.
I know. I hung out most of Friday here.
Yes, you did.
It was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. We had live music. We had underwriters. We had volunteers. And we had a lot of members renewing and a lot of new members.
I mostly appreciate the volunteers who brought food for the people doing the food drive.
Well, it really was good food.
Yeah.
It was. While we're talking about the membership drive, I'd like to mention to those of you listening this morning that although our membership drive is over, we would still love to receive your renewal letter in the mail or your new membership.
That's right. You can just send a check to P.O. Box 2465, Sandpoint, Idaho, 83864.
True. And you can also go online to krfy.org and click on the donate button. Or you can call. You can certainly call in here at 265-2992.
Although I don't think we have a volunteer standing by. You can leave a message.
That's what you would do today.
Well, let's turn to the weather and today's topics. Right now, we've got a chance of showers all day at about 30%. It was not looking terribly like rain, but I think that's moving in later on. Tonight, it continues. We have a high of 66. Tonight's low is 46. We have a chance of showers, partly cloudy through the morning hours. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high of 66, low of 47, and then Thursday and Friday, it looks like a chance of rain most of the time during the day or night, coming and going, with highs in the 60s, lows in the low 50s. So not a great week to start out with the cruises, but I think some of our guests are going to talk a little bit about the lake and the conditions of the lake and what's happening out there now. Julie, why don't you go ahead and introduce Molly and Linda?
Yes, I'd like to. Our guests this morning are from the Lakes Commission. The entire title is the Lake Pend'Oreille River, Priest Lake, and Priest River Commission, which must be why we call it the Lakes Commission. And our guests this morning are Molly McCann, who is the coordinator. Hello, Molly.
Hello. And thanks for having us.
You bet. Do I have your name right, McCann?
Yeah, it's yes. Perfect.
Good. And Linda Mitchell, director. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Julie.
It's great to have you here this morning.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's begin with an overview because it's a long title and you do a lot of things. Why don't you tell us a bit about what the Lakes Commission is and what it does?
I'd be happy to do that. We've actually been around for a while. We were formed in 2003. By House Bill 110 down in Boise. The commissioners are appointed by the governor. We are an advisory board to the state of Idaho on water quality and quantity issues here in North Idaho, specifically to the Pend'Oreille Basin, which also includes the entire Priest drainage. And that is our greatest concern. We're always dealing with quality issues and quantity issues. We have public meetings four times a year, quarterly meetings. This is an opportunity for the public to reach out, to be heard, and to be educated. And we couldn't do it without Molly here because she's an incredible coordinator. She is the third coordinator we've had. We started out with Kate Wilson, who did a fabulous job, who's now up in Canada, working diligently for environmental issues up there. And then up until recently, Erin Mader was our coordinator, who is now getting into education. All three of our coordinators have been so helpful to the commission in educating us on things that we don't always necessarily have the time to do. We are made up of eight commissioners. Five of us are civilians, and I'm happy to say our five original commissioners are still here from 2003, very dedicated. It's comprised of Ford Elsesser, who is our chairman. He's an attorney. He's a senior partner of a local attorney firm here, and he has worked in many aspects of law, but also very specifically about issues involving our lake. Brent Baker, who was owner up till recently of Baker Construction, who's now a consultant. Mark Brinkmeyer, owner of Riley Creek Lumber. And Craig Hill, who is the owner-manager of Hills Resort up in Priest Lake. Myself, I'm owner, along with my husband Curtis, of Lake Pend'Oreille Cruises. So clearly I have been involved, spent tens of thousands of hours on the lake and have a real passion for the lake. All five of our commissioners actually are very passionate. Our other three commissioners are with the government, and we have Daryl Early, who is have been Deputy Attorney General and is now with the Natural Resources Division. He's going to be excellent for our commission. Karen Cathy with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and Mark Bostrom, an ex officio member of Montana DEQ.
So tell us, is this a lifetime appointment as a commissioner?
No, we have to be renewed every 3 years. Mm-hmm. We used to have, at our own expense, go down because we are not paid. Molly is paid, but we are not. Mm-hmm. And that shows the dedication and the passion, because there's a lot of work involved. But we would have to go down and appear before the Senate to be recommissioned every 3 years. Recently, I think because we've been with them so long, they've been allow us to do that by telephone.
It's hard to imagine five more fine people and well-qualified, though, to be on the commission.
Well, I think
I agree. Yeah.
So, Molly, tell us a little bit about what you coordinate.
Okay. Well, basically, I'm researching and studying current issues that are relevant in our watershed, and bringing those issues to the commissioners. I'm just staying on top of all the issues that are going on as best I can. I sit on many advisory boards, steering committees. Honestly, sometimes I feel like I spend my life in meetings. But basically anything that could negatively affect our watershed, I'm paying attention to and bringing to the commissioners so that they can have an educated make an educated decision about that.
So which advisory groups are most important in that education process for you?
Oh, I don't think one is more important than the other necessarily. I'm on the Waterways Advisory Board for the county. And these are constantly changing too, the steering committees and such. I sit on the Priest Lake Water Management Study Steering Committee that's currently going on. Fish and Game is constantly having, meetings to make decisions about their future fish management plans. And I will sit on those steering committees. Aquatic invasive species issues, whatever happens to be going on with that. We used to have Aquatic Invasive Species Task Force for the county, but that has disassembled. And so now I try to bring all the players together once a year to stay on top of what the issues are there, what the current situation is.
There are a lot of issues, and we can and should delve into some of them. But was there one issue, one overriding reason for being? What was the spark that created the commission?
It was actually a big wake-up call for the community. It was about 2002, I believe. The Army Corps of Engineers, it was a drought situation in the Northwest. And, of course, we're part of the Columbia River Basin. And they wanted our water in the summertime to drop our summer pool level, which is normally 2062 to 2062 and a half. And they were talking about dropping it 4 feet or more, which, of course, would have been devastating to our economy. We very much depend on tourism. It would have completely changed our shoreline. People would not have been able to use their docks for the most part, because of the storms here on Lake Pend'Oreille are permanent docks. They're not floating. And there was an uproar about it. So we basically had to threaten litigation and get real involved. Ford was very involved with this. And Sean Keogh, I think, was instrumental, our senator, in getting this Lakes Commission formed down through Boise. And so we can stay on top and be in front of any issues instead of dealing with it, the aftermath of it. And that was the main impetus in the beginning. And of course, it's developed into many other issues as well.
And of course, power is finely nuanced, but are there any teeth to the recommendations that you can make, or is it a matter of focusing attention?
I think it's focusing attention and educating not only the public, but the government. They need to stay on top of it. And Boise has been fairly supportive of us, I think, over the years, and even to the point of funding us, which I think is exceptional. Right. Sean Keogh has been a part of that as well. So it is important.
And you're an advisory board. Who do you report to? Who is your main person you're
directly
chatting with?
To the governor.
All right. So he receives reports from you all about issues related to this watershed. That's great.
Is there a model after which it was patterned? Are there other similar commissions? North Idaho seems uniquely blessed in the West with an abundance of water, so maybe there isn't, but...
Right. I did do a little research on that, and there aren't any similar commissions in Idaho that I know of, and I didn't have time to look into the rest of the U.S., but No, there really isn't. There are commissions specifically for a purpose, like for agriculture, fish and wildlife, education. And then there's I think, Bear River Commission or Bear Lake Commission, but it's specifically focused on water rights and water use between three states and resolving any conflict that might occur there. But the Lakes Commission, the Pend'Oreille Basin Commission, is focused on an area and then all the many natural resource issues within that. So it is unique. And I think it's unique because we have so much water up here in the north, like you said. Our county has 9% water, which is unique to any county in Idaho.
By surface area, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Boise's just dealing with very different issues related to their water. And, you know, we have Sean Keogh as a representative up here. But other than that, they don't have time. I mean, she doesn't have time to focus on all the issues. So.
Why does it always come back to Minnesota during my show? There is the Great Lakes Commission, which is also a commission worrying about the water levels and the quality of Great Lakes. And that also, well, that commission also works with Canada.
Isn't so. Minnesota the land of 10,000 lakes?
Yes, it
and
is.
You have only one commission?
True.
Oh, no, that shame. Seems like a big job.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of territory to cover.
There you go.
Well, so tell us a little bit more about why this is important. It seems obvious to a lakefront owner why they would want their water up and for the tourism part, but tell us about some of the other impacts, the environmental consequences.
Excuse me. Well, I mean, honestly, we have excellent water quality here. I mean, our waters are very cold and they run very deep and they have excellent, you know, continuous flow. Which keeps our water quality intact for the most part, but there are going to be specific areas in the lake that are seeing increased temperatures and increased pollution, and that's going to, you know, result from, you know, high land use in one particular area, septics leaking, people fertilizing their lawns, using herbicides, and just in areas, and you'll see those in areas where there's lower flow, where the water's shallow, and like I said, where there's just more land use going on. It's just the potential negative impacts to our lake are many. But really the key is prevention, because you really can't go back. And once we're polluted and once there's any kind of major catastrophe or pollution, it really is never resolved. And we don't have that issue. We have the ability to protect that at this point. So, but aquatic invasive species, quagga zebra mussels are now, and you know, they've always been a threat, but they're even more of an immediate threat now with them being in Montana. Any invasive species is of concern. We have, crude oil going over our lake, so we have the potential for a major spill.
I think growth is something we have to be considering too, because I mean, I've been cruising these waters for 40 years and I have seen so much change along the shoreline. Ever since Sunset Magazine named us the best small town in the West, all of us know there have been so many accolades since then, and the area is growing, and with growth becomes great, great problems for the lake. Especially along the shoreline, I'm seeing more and more huge, beautiful homes being built with these humongous lawns that, as Molly said, are being fertilized. We're getting direct pollution into the lake through this. And I think the realtors are actually doing a good job of educating the owners, and builders are doing a good job as well. But we have to stay on top of that.
Mm-hmm. And are there any regulations around fertilizing near the lake or not at this time?
No, there really isn't. That's just considered non-point source pollution, and it's difficult to keep track of. But
there are opportunities to landscape with plants that are more beneficial to this process. Molly, and I know you've been very involved with that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, well, I'm a bit passionate about native plants and the use of native plants, especially on the shoreline. And that is because native plants are adapted for this area. They have the ability to absorb, you know, pollutants before they reach the water. So we encourage people to use them on the shore between any kind of land use activity they're having that could get to the lake. They don't require fertilizers or additional water. But honestly, that's a difficult sell. People really do love their lawns. I'm not exactly sure why. I mean, I know lawns are comfortable and cooling and all, but it just seems like there's less privacy. And it also has the ability to impact their immediate shoreline with algae and plants. And if you're feeding your lawn right up to the shore, then you're also feeding the plants in the water. And people are constantly complaining about that. So there are things they can do to change that.
Has the Lakes Commission offered any guidelines for homeowners along the lake?
We did a number of years ago, and there was an actual program that people could attend to be educated about just these issues.
Yeah, it's important.
Now, is that the Lake Assist program?
Yeah, so I used to work for the Lake Assist program, and we have an extensive manual book for homeowners that go into how to prevent erosion, how to best fertilize, building roads, boating and recreation guidelines. And that program is through Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District, who also administers the Lakes Commission funds. And so the Lake Assist program and the Lakes Commission have been working hand in hand for like 8 years or so. And the Lakes Commission has actively supported the Lake Assist program.
And if folks wanted to find that information, could they find it via your website, or where might they find that?
Both, but the Lake Assist website is just lakeassist.org, and it's LAKEASSIST, Lake Assist, as it sounds. And then there's a link to each of those particular, each topic.
Good.
And then there's a link to Lake Assist on the Lakes Commission website as well. And the Lakes Commission website is lakes-commission.com.
Thank goodness it's not the Lake Pondere Lake.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
So let's move just a little bit to maybe below the shoreline, the waterline. How's the war on milfoil going?
A milfoil?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. it will never be eradicated as they initially intended. It's just a control measure right now. Department of Agriculture is who is controlling our aquatic weeds and all species for that matter. And they do a survey every year for all species, but for milfoil, they just are focusing on public swim areas and boat launches as a priority, and focus on eradicating or controlling it in those locations, because the herbicide treatments and control treatments haven't proved very successful. They have in specific areas. The city beach and the city of Sandpoint has put money towards like non-herbicide alternative treatment methods for milfoil, which seem to be working well, as far as I know.
So it's targeted mostly to mechanical or hand means of...
Yeah, diver dredging, which is very costly.
Right, and you certainly can't do the whole lake. If an owner has a pocket of milfoil in the bay in front of their house, what should they do? Should they report it to someone, or should they go out and start hand pulling it themselves?
You could start by not fertilizing their lawns, which is only going to exacerbate the problem.
Let's say they just bought the house. And it wasn't them, and they know better now. But now the thing's there. What's their best
blankets,
action?
There are blankets, and I'm not sure exactly how that works, but they can lay blanket.
A bottom barrier.
Bottom barrier, that's exactly what it is. That's helpful. It's no herbicide use there if they don't want to use herbicides. And
you do need permit for that through IDL. It has a very specific design guideline, and it is very effective. Milfoil spreads by fragmentation, so one little piece of that milfoil plant will form a new plant. So, no, we don't want people out there just yanking it out.
It free. You don't want them yanking it out and
exactly.
Setting it adrift.
Not right, sending it down to their neighbor's property and so forth. But, so how you remove it is very important. And again, it's not the only plant out there of concern. Flowering rush is probably a little more concerning at this point.
But it's so pretty when it's in bloom.
It's beautiful.
Which is how it got here. Wow. Exactly.
So what, tell us about Flowering Rush, what the thread is and what can be done.
Well, it's just, it's very, it's
invasive.
It's very invasive. It spreads very quickly. It's a, it can be submerged or emerged. It like, it prefers shallow, bays. So it, it tends to be filling in our swim areas and our small bays. It spreads through a little rhizome that snaps off quite easily and then floats downstream. It becomes just very, very dense. It also breeds swimmer's itch, and it is sort of excellent predatory habitat for our northern pike, which ends up being a threat to bull trout.
If none of you have had swimmer's itch, I can tell you you don't want it. This in itself would be a reason to keep the flowering rush down.
Yes.
It's terrible.
And the reason flowering rush breeds it is because snails prefer the foliage of flowering rush, and you need a snail as part of the host process. So waterfowl poo, it ends up going into the parasite goes into the snail and then comes out and goes into a human body or another animal. And so it's this host process. So if the snail doesn't have a habitat, then it won't be there.
And ducks might have something to do with it, too.
And geese. Geese probably have something to do with it.
Right. That's right. Yuck.
And so now there's programs to pull it.
Right. So we do volunteer pulls in the spring and the fall because hand pulling, there isn't an herbicide treatment for flowering rush at this point, which is probably why it's the most concerning. So hand pulling seems to be the best, and we focus those efforts at City Beach and Dog Beach, our local swim areas. But if there were homeowners in specific bays that wanted any guidance on how to pull it properly, I would be happy to form some sort of, pulling event for them.
So if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY Pondere. We're talking this morning about the lake and the Lakes Commission with Director Linda Mitchell and Coordinator Molly McCann. So we've been talking right now about threats above the waterline and below the waterline, water quality. Certainly invasive species are a quantity as well as quality issue. What are some of the other current threats to the lake that you're working with?
There's sorry. I thought you were going to say something. Stormwater pollution is a big one. I help teach the stormwater erosion education program, which is designed for builders and contractors, preventing erosion. Basically, our stormwater, there's stormwater erosion along the shore for one thing. And then, all our stormwater in the city of Sandpoint goes directly to surface water, either Sand Creek or Pondere River. And so anything that ends up on the land, on the streets, ends up in our lake. And so I provide a lot of, I do presentations on that topic, teach the stormwater erosion class. We also have a class for real estate agents that they seem to be getting a lot out of on all land use issues that they can pay attention to as real estate agents and let their clients know. One being, don't remove all the vegetation on your shoreline. If you want that view, keep it there. Know where your water is, know if there's a wetland, understand what your septic is, if your septic's in good condition, how it works, how to maintain it. Those are all ways that we can end up polluting our water unintentionally.
I can imagine you with a big stamp going around Sandpoint stamping all the storm sewers with the fish. Is that you who does that, Molly?
No, I think the water keepers did that in conjunction with the City of Sandpoint project.
It's a great reminder. I do think about it every time I see one of those.
But there are a lot of cooperative educational opportunities out there with regards to signage information boards at the various places where people might put their boats in and not spread invasive species.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have messaging at our launches. And that reminds me, we are starting the, what's the word I'm looking for? Watch Your Wake campaign, the Avoid the Shore, Ride the Core. And honestly, we could use volunteers for that. basically, over the years, we're seeing that we have more boats on the lake, we have larger boats on the lake, and we have boats specifically designed to produce very large wakes. And we just want to encourage the public to boaters to stay in the middle, ride the core, and don't ride the shore. We do have a 200-foot wake zone, but with some of these wake boats, the wakes, 200 feet is not adequate. These wakes, I mean, some of these boats are 4,000 pounds. They have 2,000 pounds on each ballast to drop it, you know, down and produce a large wake. And so 200 feet isn't adequate, so just stay as far away from shore as possible. And this is for erosion, which, you know, we want to prevent in order, you know, to protect our spawning grounds for our fish and our just wildlife habitat.
And how are you needing volunteers for that project?
Well, we haven't really developed a plan yet, but we are going to be at the Wooden Boat Show. I'll have a booth set up there, so anybody who feels passionate about this topic and wants to share it with the public is welcome to join me there on July 8th and 9th. I would like to see people at the boat launches just talking with the public about it. We're going to have some little keychain bottle openers to hand out and some goodies. But just to educate people and why it's important and have the public let boaters know that it's important to them. Because really, we're seeing a lot of property damage. It's not safe. People feel uncomfortable swimming in the water when there's large wakes. And so we the reason this campaign came about is because the public was coming to the Waterways Advisory Board saying, there's a problem here. We haven't seen this in the past. And it's not going to go away. So unless we do something about it or try to make an effort to do something about it.
So it sounds like a great example of being reactive to a need brought up by the community.
Exactly, yeah.
So this is Ride the Core, C-O-R-E, not like your original Ride the Core, C-O-R-P motto, right?
Well, that's happening too, yeah. But... Right, it's Ride the Core, like the middle. So, and we want to encourage people to come out of bays, and not be, you know, wake surfing or tubing or repetitive circles in bays. Just get out into the open water.
That does bring us to the Army Corps, though, Phil. Would you like to take a music break and come back to it?
No, I'd like to ask one more question before we go to a music break, and that is, we've mentioned the meetings a couple times. When do they occur, and how can people find out about them in case they have issues they want to bring or they want to find out more about any of these topics?
Yeah, they occur quarterly, so spring, summer, fall, winter is our ultimate goal. It's difficult sometimes to get everybody together on the same date, but we do. And so if you are interested in knowing when our meetings are, receiving any updates from the Lakes Commission, you can email me at lakescommission@gmail.com and just let me know that you'd like to be added to the email list. We also have a newsletter that comes out. Our website, again, is lakes-commission.com. And so we have our meeting dates on there. We have past minutes. And all the issues that we are currently facing. And then my phone number is 208-263-5310. And you're welcome to call me at any point.
We do have a meeting coming up August 25th at the Columbia Bank Building and in the Event Center.
Which that must be the summer meeting rather than last fall's fall meeting.
And that's from 9 a.m. till noon.
We're going to take a short break here and listen to your Fire Lake, a summertime classic. At least I always think of summer.
A great song for our topic today, Phil. Yeah.
Not that the lake's on fire, it's not. But some of the issues might agitate a few people. And before we completely slide off of the invasive species, we should talk a little bit about the boat sticker program.
Absolutely. So this year there was a bit of hubbub because the Department of Agriculture was looking at decreasing the amount of boat inspection stations and the hours that they would be open. And this was concerning for the Lakes Commission and the public because Montana had just recently discovered invasive mussel veligers, which are the tiny microscopic mussels in their waters. So the state legislature actively pursued increased funding, emergency funding of $1 million for this year to make sure that our stations were up to par with last year and above and beyond that. So they opened three more stations, and they have one station that is to open 24 hours a day. And that is because people feel like there's a lot of boats being missed after dark and early morning. So they've opened one station in order to just test that out because they're concerned about the safety of the boat inspectors and concerned that there really aren't any boats at that time. So I'm not familiar with how that's going yet, but I haven't heard any complaints. And then you are required to stop for an inspection. And that's separate than the invasive species sticker. You also need to purchase an invasive species sticker. And that helps support the boat inspection program. So one, you need to have your boat inspected because we do not want any invasive species coming to our waters. Two, you need to support that program so to keep our waters free. So you can get those stickers at all the stations. We have three stations in Bonner County, in Clark Fork, Samuels, and Albany Falls Recreation Area. You can also, I have the list of all the places you can buy them, but generally anywhere there's boat equipment, North 40, Alpine Sports, almost all the marinas, they're widely available.
However, I would say be sure to get yours early because they do run out from time to time and yes, then have to reorder.
It is unfortunately common that, Parks and Rec doesn't anticipate quite accurately how many people are going to be purchasing them. But
and so let's say someone has a boat and they don't take it anywhere outside of the lake. They still need a sticker, right?
Yes.
And sailboats, kayaks, rowboats.
Yes, I believe you're exempt if you're 10 feet if you're under 10 feet and inflatable. But other than that, you need a sticker.
Good to know. So the canoe you brought from Minnesota, you're going to need to put a sticker on it, Julie. So
I have many stickers.
So you have the
happy
canoe,
to get them.
So they have a similar program?
Mm-hmm, oh, okay. They do there, but it's true. Anything, I do have a number of boats that came from Minnesota, and they all needed the sticker. So lots of stickers to buy.
Yeah, so I believe right now canoes and kayaks are $7, and motorboats are and sailboats are $22. Next year, that will be going up to $30.
Hmm. So the risk of opening a can of worms that might be invasive someday themselves. hot topic this time of year is always how fast the lake level is coming up or not. Go.
Poor Molly. She's been inundated with phone calls. No, the lake is subject to the Army Corps of Engineers is making that decision, and we are controlled by the federal government. And a lot of people not happy about that, and it's understandable. When we originally contracted for the dam way back when, in the 50s, we were told, the state of Idaho, that we would regain control of the lake at a local level, a state level, when the dam was paid off, and that was in 1962. Well, we didn't to take care of that, and now it's impossible to go back. Too much time has gone by. We are part of the Columbia River system, and the Army Corps of Engineers, first and foremost, everybody thinks it's about power, but it's also very importantly about flood control. And if the lake, it's been on free flow since late April, and as of yesterday, it is no longer on free flow. And frankly, I'm a little bit surprised because there's still a lot of snow up in Montana, and that's where our water's coming from.
And for those of us who don't understand all the terminology, what is free flow?
That's when the dam is wide open. They're just letting the water go through as quickly as it can. It's not about generating power. It's about moving the water out, keeping the levels down low enough so that we don't flood later in the season. Had they closed the dam or kept it back and let the water come up too soon, people would be losing their docks in June or possibly even in May. There could be flooding for people's homes that are less than the 40 feet. Prior to the 60s when they had the 40-foot setback, it's a serious problem, and it would do a lot of damage.
A lot of water drains through here. I'm not sure that new people to the area realize just how large a basin this water drains from, but think of everything west of the Continental Divide, north, just a little bit north of the town of Salmon in Idaho, then on up into Canada, and all that snowmelt comes down the Clark Fork River Which the Clark Fork River is pretty much on free flow right now.
We've been cruising up the Clark Fork. Let me tell you, there's a really strong current there. Yeah. Really strong. And so now the level is going to start coming up. Now that they have slowed down that flow, it's no longer on free flow. We're actually ahead of schedule, you know, as far as, people want full pool May 1st. It's not going to happen, folks, not unless you want to have your docks float away and your homes float away. It just isn't going to happen. It can't. We have to watch the weather.
So what's the best guess when as to when the lake level will be at full pool?
End of June. Yep. Just in a couple weeks here.
So just hang on for July 4th weekend, and by then maybe some of our thunder showers will be away and we'll have some nice beach days.
Yes. You know, and people, the Army Corps is not obligated to have the lake at summer pool until July 5th or around there. But last year we reached summer pool June 15th, which was extremely early. And this year it's also going to be early. But for some reason, people want it up by the middle of June and don't seem to understand how serious that flood risk is.
Once you're up, you can't necessarily get it back down to prevent those floods in time. So
right. It's a big dynamic system.
Yeah, and in 2011 we had we were above flood stage, and it's very expensive to keep your dock intact. I mean, people were hiring Kramer, barge to put concrete blocks on their dock, and people are hauling sandbags and tying their docks to trees, and it's a problem. Not only because that dock is valuable and it's time consuming, but because docks are floating around the lake and are a hazard.
And the increased erosion caused by that is
right.
Yeah, tremendous.
Definitely a big risk.
And it hasn't been that great of swimming yet weather anyway. Who cares? A couple more weeks.
The boaters.
Well, the boaters.
Boaters care, yes.
So tell us about the fall when it goes back down. That's about more than just flooding.
Yes.
I don't know. you're probably not getting asked that a lot now, but I'm thinking ahead.
Part of it, the lake has to be down to its normal winter pool level by mid-November because of the kokanee spawning. Because if you wait until after that, the kokanee have spawned and then their eggs are going to be destroyed. So you're going to destroy that fishery, which would destroy other fisheries because there are many species dependent on kokanee for forage. So it's for the kokanee, and obviously, you know, some people, why does it have to come down? Well, if it doesn't come down, then in the spring it's going to, you know, flood. You know, prior to the dams being built, the lake could fluctuate as much as 20 feet. So it's really important the dam is helping to control so that we can have these wonderful summers and enjoy a fabulous recreational opportunities that we wouldn't have otherwise.
So there are clear benefits to having it draw down in the winter.
Oh, absolutely essential. And there's a benefit also, you know, there was a time when we were trying to keep the lake up at a higher level in the wintertime, thinking that it was going to help the kokanee, but through scientific research, it was discovered that wasn't the case. By having the lake go down as low as it does, if we have a deep freeze before it snows, that's really going to help with the milfoil. It's going to kill off much of the milfoil, and so we have to hope for those excellent weather conditions that it doesn't snow too early so we can get a deep freeze.
So it's really a question of timing. You want to hold on. We want to hold on to the water as long as we can, then draw it down. But not so fast that rapid drawdown causes problems.
Right.
Right. And so we have a new sort of verbal agreement with the Corps that they will not start drawdown until the third weekend in September I can't remember.
Yes, it's after that event that happens in Priest River that weekend.
Or the 18th, I think.
It has to be the weekend after the Priest River event.
Right.
Water days, I think, that they have.
Okay.
Yeah, so it doesn't start, and then it only goes down 1 to 2 feet by October 1st. Then they have to get earnest about dropping because they have to get it down all the way by the 15th of November.
And it takes time.
It does take time. It doesn't come down just like that. Mm-hmm. It's fast.
Yeah, so we do have a longer fall summer pool now, which is nice because people were kind of planning their vacations and travel here around Labor Day, which is when it generally started dropping. So now they have an extra week or so there.
Actually, an extra 2 to 3 weeks, yeah. Really, because when they were dropping the day after Labor Day, it really affected September. And as we all know, those of us who live here, September is a beautiful month to be out on the lake.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorites. I know in the past, the winter pool was fairly steady. And then there was a proposal some number of years ago to fluctuate it, and that was in limbo for a while, but now it's been implemented. Tell us about that.
Yeah, flexible winter pool has been in place, I don't know, 4 or 5 years
now? 4 years now. I think we have one more year to go. Mm-hmm. It's a 5-year program.
Yeah.
And that was a sore point.
That was primarily for power generation, but it's a sore point locally. So tell us a little more about that. Without getting swanks ridden, we take all the time up to the top of the hour.
It creates a lot of issues with erosion. It creates issues with icing and people's docks being damaged. There is a huge possibility of great economic impact to the area from this. So it's something that the commission was definitely not in favor of. It's one of the things that we weren't successful in fighting, but I have to say, all in all, over the years, you know, I can remember the very first year of the commission, Army Corps never came to our meetings. They were invited. They weren't listening to us. But, you know, we have a really good working relationship with the Army Corps. There's always somebody there now, and BPA is sending people, and they're listening, and they're interested and amazed at some of the meetings we've had, the amount of public input that they're getting, and they're taking us seriously.
It makes a difference when people are listened to.
Yes.
It really does. We've talked a lot about the Lake Pendre and the river and the Army Corps, and the commission's title is Priest Lake and Priest River Commission. Is there anything happening up at Priest Lake or Priest River that would be worth commenting on? You're involved in?
Priest Lake has been pretty much at the forefront the last year or two. There's problems with Priest River. The water is too warm. It's affecting the fishery, and there needs to be more flow for Priest Lake into Priest River to help the fishery. And there's discussions of how to do that and implement that, as well as the thoroughfare and what's going on there. So, yeah, Priest Lake and Priest River have been at the forefront recently.
Yeah, and being a smaller lake, as you draw down some water for the Priest River, that has a more immediate impact on the...
Well, the way they want to draw, instead of drawing it down, there's still water coming through, but because it's surface water, it's warm, they would like to siphon it from the deep water so that it's getting very cold water coming through, and that could make a huge difference, but it's not going to be a cheap project, but it's something that's being looked into.
And recent repairs didn't involve changes to there's a weir dam, or what is it that comes out of Priest Lake? There's something, you'll know more about that than I do.
I don't know exactly what it's called, and the updates were years ago. There isn't any real recent updates.
And none coming up? Is that not true? There's no upcoming?
So there is a current study going on for Priest Lake water management, and that is because in 2015 we had a serious drought. And so they were looking at reducing the flows to Priest River to below they actually looked at just shutting it down completely, but 30 CFS. And that is because Priest Lake is, according to statutory requirements, supposed to be at the 3-foot mark on the gauge. And so that has priority to the river. And so it became a concern because actually the lake at that time wasn't even reaching 3 feet. And so Department of Water Resources, who manages the dam, reached out to Priest Lake community to explain to them, you know, we might not reach that level and this is what could happen and you might need to do this with your boat or that. And then there were people concerned about the lack of flow in the river and what that would do to the fish habitat and their waterfront and all that. And so it spurred a study that IDWR is funding for, how much is it? $300,000, to determine if they were to keep Priest Lake higher, and that height we don't know, but 6 inches is one number we're looking at. If they were going to keep that higher, so that if there was a drought, they could use that water to feed the river. So that hydrology is being looked at. They're also looking at possible ways that they could alter the dam in order to accommodate that. And then if any of those changes took place, how would that affect the thoroughfare? Because the thoroughfare's breakwater is failing and they need to redesign it. And that they don't want to redesign it without knowing what the lake levels will be and what the hydrology will be. Did that answer your question?
Yes. That's very complicated.
And I think that did open the can of worms up. But, you know, there's so many challenges with water when there's too much or too little. In those drought years or heavy snowpack years, that's when your work gets really interesting, I'll bet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was historic. They hadn't seen that. Yeah, so there isn't a plan for drought. Now, ideally, there will be.
Well, we're running a little short on time. Mm-hmm. Always welcome to have you back anytime there's some pressing issues, or if you want to talk again on a short segment just before a meeting or after a meeting to update folks.
Okay, great. We'd
be glad to have you back. So
yeah.
Any parting thoughts for us? Anything you really want to highlight today you didn't?
I just want to highlight having respect for water overall. We're very, very fortunate to have the water quality and the abundance of water that we have here. It's extremely rare. Whether it's flooding or water consumption and conserving water, water pollution, drinking water, just respect that our water is vital and that you do have a role in it. Try not to be selfish about the...
It's precious and it isn't endless, is it?
No.
It's not unlimited.
So, that's my parting words.
Beautifully said. How can I add more than that? Molly did a great job. Yes,
water is
please
life.
Please respect the water. Water is life.
That's right. Well, thank you both for joining us. And Linda, you better get out on the lake. I understand
I'm
it's first
out.
Day. Good
yeah,
for you.
First and day of the summer season.
Molly, you have an endless list of committees to attend, so you better get going too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for coming. If anyone tuned in late and missed a little bit, we've been speaking with Linda Mitchell, Molly McCann from the Lakes Commission. You're welcome to listen to the podcast, which should be up technology permitting later today.
I'm the technology permitting person. It will be up later today.
Ooh, I like that. So right now we're going to segue to our current events section with a little bit of Elton John. Elton John, Madman Across the Water.
We should have had that play after we talked about the wakeboarders film.
Well, I think the whole topic of lake levels can be very angst-ridden. I'm sure the commission can sometimes feel like madmen across the water.
It was a good interview. We learned a lot.
Yeah. And if you were just tuning in, we're interviewing Linda Mitchell and Molly McCann with the Lakes Commission. That'll be up soon as a podcast, as we do every Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday morning shows.
True. What other morning shows do we have,
Coming up tomorrow, we have Chris Bessler and Susie Perez as host. Their guests will be Jeremy Grimm, Program Director for the Lohr Foundation. And he'll be talking a lot about the work they do here at Sandpoint, I'm sure. That's at 8 a.m. on 88.5 FM. Then on Thursday, Jim Healy and Jack Peterson will have an exclusive interview with world-renowned singer-songwriter Judy Collins. That's exciting. I was hearing Jim talk about that the other day. He somehow has a friend or knows a friend of Judy's, and that's going to be an exciting interview. So tune in for this special recorded interview and hear about her summer tour with Stephen Stills and the recent album of Stephen Sondheim songs.
I'll be looking forward to that one. That'll be great. And next Tuesday, Phil and I will be here again, and we've got a great interview, and it's going to be with the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society. They're coming up on their 20-year anniversary. There will be special events related to that, and we'll be interviewing past presidents Ray Charlton and Gail Bolin, along with current president Ken Thacker.
And we want to thank everybody for listening during the recent membership drive to 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio. You can always visit our website, krfy.org, and make a secure PayPal donation. Or you can send a check to KRFY at P.O. Box 2465, Sandpoint, Idaho, 83864.
Yeah, we hope you'll do it. New members and renewing members both.
I think we have time for just a couple of upcoming events. Julie, what's happening this week?
Well, there is a lot going on, and I know we're short on time, but one important thing everyone should be aware of is that on the 16th, the Art Walk opening reception will be happening. POAC sponsors the 40th annual Revolving Art Exhibit, and this year we're going to have more than 40 venues. So would be something you wouldn't want to miss this year.
That's always a lot of fun times.
That's right. Also on Saturday, we have the Chafe 150. bike ride. So that's another exciting event, and folks should be aware of that and maybe participate or watch the cyclists coming and going or join yourself. And finally, on the 17th.
Now, the Chafe Ride isn't KRFY doing one of the aid stations.
We are the Pack River Store, everyone, and our stop is named Over the River. So for those of you doing the short ride, you ought to be aware that we'll be
there. That's a fun time at Sandpoint, and we're about out of time. So we're going to say goodbye.
Goodbye.